Mike Steven in for Nick DiGilio this morning here on 720 WGN. You know, this year marks the 150th anniversary of the Secret Service. And that organization, I think, has really had this aura of mystery and power around it, but has also been plagued by scandal and recently has been facing some pretty trying times. One of the first female Secret Service agents is Sue Ann Baker, and she's the author of the book Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. And in the book, she talks about breaking the glass ceiling in a very much male-dominated world. She is on the phone with us right now. Sue Ann, nice to talk to you.
Well, nice to talk to you, Mike. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, thank you for being with us. And I think your story, it's really neat. And it's crazy because you don't get to talk to many Secret Service agents, I think, every day. But you were sworn in back in 1971. You were one of the five first female agents. Why did you decide to go into the Secret Service?
Well, at the time that I first got an inkling that they were even going to open positions for the Secret Service, I was with the White House Police, and before that I was a Metropolitan Police Department officer working in the Youth Division. So I was getting pretty tired of dealing with juvenile burglars and heroin addicts, and I ended up running into one of my classmates that I had gone to rookie school with. And he said, well, why don't you come over to the White House, you know, and work with me? And I said, well, you know, they don't have women in the, you know, in the White House Police. And he said, no, they're thinking about opening some positions. So here's the guy's name and number, call him. And I did. And I went in for an interview. And 6 months later, I had a top secret clearance and became an executive protective service officer, which today is the White House Police, or the uniform branch of the Secret Service. They looked at us for a year to see if we could possibly be agents. I think they were just testing the waters.
Yeah.
And then after a year of being pulled out by the Secret Service and protecting foreign dignitaries or wives of foreign dignitaries, they then decided to make us full-fledged Secret Service agents. Working at the White House sounded a whole lot more glamorous than working the streets of Washington, D.C.
It sure is. And the process that you went through to become a Secret Service agent, you know, you said you went through, you know, step by step, but it is pretty demanding because they do a pretty thorough background check on you, and then there are the physical demands that are part of the job.
That's correct. But at the time, that first year, they didn't really know what to do with us, even in terms of the physical demands and in training.
Because you were women.
Yeah, we were on the job training, and they didn't know whether we should have the same requirements as the men or not. And so it was a learning curve on everybody's part. From the Secret Service, it was a 106-year-old, male-dominated agency. And so we were five women among 1,150 men, and it was a steep learning curve for everyone involved.
Yeah, and I want you to talk a little bit about just that, being one of five women in this organization, this clandestine organization that has this intense reputation. You say that it's a very male-dominated world, and it still is today, as you write. But was that the toughest thing that you had to overcome when you went into the Secret Service?
Was it the toughest? It certainly was tough. I'm not sure whether it was the toughest or not. You know, there were a lot of agents that didn't think female agents had any business being in the Secret Service, but there were also those agents who saw a need for females. Clint Hill, who was Jackie Kennedy's agent, was one of those. He often wished he had had a female agent with him to go in places where Jackie Kennedy would be, and he would stick out like a sore thumb.
Right.
So he understood that there was a place for female agents, and there were others who also did, and they mentored us and helped us break in so that we could earn the respect of the other agents.
And just right there, the respect of other agents. I mean, so you got sworn in 1971, and that's great. you know, you're advancing the cause, but then you have to work in this male-dominated arena. Was that difficult for you? Because, like you said, not every agent was on board with having females in this organization.
Well, that's true, and of course it was difficult. Maybe we made it or thought it was more difficult than it was, but we didn't want to mess up. We wanted to make sure that the path was clear for those agents that were the female agents that would come after us, and that the agency would continue hiring female agents. And we were not ever together. They would send us off in different directions, so it wasn't like there were five women that ever met and had dinner together. We were pretty much all on our own.
What was life like as a Secret Service agent back in 1971?
Well, it was exciting. It was exhausting. It was dangerous at times, and I'm really glad that I lived through it. I helped protect people on the national campaign trail in 1972. I was with Eleanor McGovern, mm-hmm. and before that, Shirley Chisholm, who was the first black woman to run for president. And so it was exhausting. In that case, we were working 12 and 16-hour days, 7 days a week, weeks and weeks and weeks. I think probably 4 months without a day off.
Wow.
So you had to have a lot of inner fortitude, and each time you're pushed out of your comfort zone and you end up doing something successful, it just builds another layer of confidence, which we all needed.
So this is really a lifestyle, because, you know, a lot of us go to work, we have our 9-to-5 jobs, we come home, we are with the family, we don't think about it, but really, as a member of the Secret Service, you really had to live this lifestyle. The Secret Service was your life, basically.
It was, and it's interesting you bring that up, because when I give speeches, I often say it's not a job and it's not a career. It is a lifestyle, but it's very, very rewarding, and the family is very tight among the Secret Service agents.
And the history of the Secret Service, you know, a lot of us understand that it's the, you know, the men and women in the sunglasses, and they've got the little thing in their ear, and they're protecting the VIPs. But for a long time, the organization was actually part of the U.S. Treasury Department. I think a lot of people don't know that.
That's correct. And they were formed actually by Abraham Lincoln. He signed the legislation on the afternoon of the day he died to form the Secret Service. But it was formed not for a president's protection, but because about a third to a half of the currency that was in circulation in the United States at that time after the Civil War was counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first responsibility they were charged with, and therefore they were under the Treasury Department up until I think it was 2001 when the Patriot Act put them under
Homeland Security.
Security, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, again, going back to the reputation, the presence of the Secret Service, I think there is this aura of mystery around it, and everyone seems to be really intrigued because there isn't a whole lot of information out there about how the Secret Service works, although now we're starting to see more of that come out with the recent events, and we'll talk about that. But I think that there is this aura around these people who, you know, wear suits, shades, pack a gun, and protect the VIPs.
Well, that's true, and I think it's as it should be. First of all, as a Secret Service agent, you are privy to a lot of secret conversations. I mean, you're in the lives of the people you're protecting. You're standing there when sometimes history is being made, and you were sworn to keep those secrets. It's not something that you go out and tell the media and the world about what you just overheard. And certainly, the protocol and the procedures that the Secret Service operates under have to be kept secret in
right.
many cases. So that's why they call it the Secret Service, I guess.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you what. Sue Ann, we'll take a short break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about where the Secret Service is today and where it's going. And I know you've got some views on that. I mean, we've heard about some stories that are not so good when it comes to the reputation of the Secret Service come out recently. So we'll talk all about that. Sue Ann Baker is the author of the book Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. Her website is SueAnnBaker.com. She was one of the first female Secret Service agents here in the United States. We'll take a short break and be right back. Mike Steven in for Nick DiGilio right here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Mike Steven in for Nick DiGilio, talking with Sue Ann Baker. She is the author of the best-selling memoir, Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. Her website is SueAnnBaker.com. She was one of the first female agents in the United States Secret Service. Sue Ann, you know, I mentioned before the break that the Secret Service has had some problems in the last few years with stories of scandals coming out about agents getting prostitutes while they were on protective detail and drinking. And that's obviously a stain on the reputation of this organization. But when you look at these scandals, I know I think that for me, you're sort of reminded these people are human beings and they are susceptible to everything else that human beings are susceptible to. Do you think that this is a problem that's been going on for a long time and now we're just starting to hear about it?
I'm not sure I can really speak to that since I'm not an agent today. I can tell you that I never saw any kind of that behavior when I was an agent. First of all, like I said, on the campaign trail, we were working such horrendous hours that who had time to go drinking? I mean, you were lucky to just fall in bed and get 4 or 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And it's true. I think that the last 3 years, starting with Cartagena and the prostitution scandal, has certainly been horrendous. It's been an embarrassment to the agency and to the other 99% of the agents who have not gotten into trouble. I have to point out that there's only been about 20 agents over that three-year period who have misbehaved, which is less than 1% of the agency. There's now 300 women in the Secret Service. Mm-hmm. None of them were involved in any of that. But I would hope that Director Clancy continues to do a great job that he apparently has so far in getting the word out and tightening up the agency, and so that going forward, that kind of behavior does not happen.
Do you think this will maybe change how the agency approaches this, the lifestyle? You said that being a Secret Service agent is basically a lifestyle, and you also said that you are required to work a lot. And I think if you are, as a human being, required to do that, there is a burnout factor, especially if you're on a protective detail and the stress of doing that day in and day out, keeping someone safe. Do you think the lifestyle contributes to some of the stuff that we're hearing about the Secret Service?
Well, I think the burnout factor is a huge one. I know that they have made changes from when I, for instance, was on the campaign trail. I started at the Democratic convention and worked throughout the whole summer to the election day. And now a detail with a candidate is on for 3 weeks and off for 3 weeks. And when I heard that, I just jumped for joy because it's absolutely necessary that people that are working that hard and under that kind of pressure and constant adrenaline flowing needs to have a break. So I don't know when that started, but I'm glad they recognized that and put it, you know, into force.
And I think it's something because you're not going into the Secret Service to get famous, to get recognition. In fact, if you do get famous in the Secret Service, it's probably not a good thing because when you in the Secret Service, when you do your job, nobody is supposed to know about you. It's like you're there, but you're not there. And it's only when something goes wrong or a scandal breaks, then the public knows about you. So in this case, it is better to be unknown.
That's true. Therein lies the secret part of the Secret Service.
Right. So you want to be secret. You want to be kind of blending in the crowd. Have you worked, you know, we see, I think, one of the iconic symbols of the Secret Service is when a candidate or the president or somebody's working the rope line, shaking hands. Did you ever have to do one of those rope lines? Because that seems like it would be absolutely, totally stressful.
That is probably the worst stress, especially when a candidate decides to break free and, against all advice, plunge into the crowd and shake hands. And it's a very dangerous situation at that point. And, you know, even if it's a friendly crowd, you never know that somebody's not going to come out with a gun in their hand and extend it to shake hands. That's exactly what happened with Wallace when he was shot in 1972 in Laurel, Maryland. And he was not wearing a bulletproof vest. He had been advised to, but it was really hot that day, so he didn't want to wear it. And yet Bremer came out and reached up and had a gun in his hand while everybody else was trying to shake his hand. Bremer shot him.
Talk about high stress. I mean, you're in a crowd. I look at the president, and he loves to go out into the crowd and be surrounded by people. And then you've got the row of people in suits with the earpieces behind them. They have to be thinking, oh, come on. Why today?
Right. I mean, you're always thankful at the end of the day that nothing happened on your shift.
Right. That's the goal. You know, Sue Ann, again, we're talking with Sue Ann Baker. Her website, SueAnnBaker.com. Her book is Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. She's one of the first female Secret Service agents to be sworn in back in 1971. You talked about how there is an increase in women right now in the agency. And I believe that for a little while there was a female director of the Secret Service. So it seems that there is some slow advancement in terms of equality and breaking that glass ceiling.
Well, that's true. When I went back to Washington this last summer to do some research, I went to a Women in Federal Law Enforcement conference, and there were a number of higher-up female agents from the Secret Service, as there were among many federal agencies. And I was absolutely in awe when I walked into that room to look at like 300 or 400 women who didn't exist in their jobs at the time that I started being a Secret Service agent. And then when I listened to what they were accomplishing and how they had moved up the ladder in all the organizations, it was really, I was overcome. It was wonderful.
And what do you think the future of the Secret Service is? Because we've heard the scandals. We know that there are some things that need to be tightened up in terms of how the agency works and checking on its agents and things like that. But when you look at the future of this organization, what's your outlook?
Oh, it's extremely positive. I mean, the agency has always learned from their mistakes, and they will put into place more procedures, more protocols to make sure that things that have happened in the past don't happen again. And it's that, I think that malleability, if that's the word, for the Secret Service to be able to learn from their mistakes that will carry them forward. And they have even more responsibility than when I was there, because now they're also responsible for computer fraud and cyber attacks, besides counterfeiting, check forgery, and protection.
Well, here's a question, Sue Ann. What did you do after you left the Secret Service? Because, there is life after this intense job. What have you been up to?
Well, I worked as an agent for 4 years. I ended up in the Los Angeles field office, which got me to the West Coast. And when I decided that I really wanted more control of my time and that I had done my duty to, break that glass ceiling, I decided to become a private investigator. And so I did that in L.A. area for a couple years, and then I met my husband when I was 30, and we ended up moving to the Virgin Islands and living on a sailboat for 5 years, and we had a security business down there and did work for Lloyd's of London in boat sinkings and so forth. And then very quick, well, to sum it up, moved to Oregon in 1984. And I became a financial planner with Waddell & Reed, which is a national company. And I did that for 21 years and just recently retired to write my book.
Well, congratulations. It's a really cool book. Again, Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. That's the name of the book. And where can we pick this book up?
You can easily pick it up by going to Amazon.com and just typing in Behind the Shades, and it will pop up. And it's in all three formats, both an e-book, the paperback, and the hardback.
That's
and then
great.
It's also, there's a link through my website that takes you to Amazon, and it's also in bookstores.
All right. That website is SueAnnBaker.com. I think it's an interesting read, and your story is really something, Sue Ann. So again, Sue Ann Baker, the author of the book Behind the Shades, A Female Secret Service Agent's True Story. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You are quite welcome, Sue Ann. Mike Steven in for Nick DiGilio. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on 720 WGN.